And welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. And as Michael Slate always says, we have a packed show for you today, so let's get going. Today's show will feature segments from the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, which you can watch at the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRevComs. And we're going to start off with an interview that Andy Z, the host of the RNL show, did with the writer and historian Paul Street on Trump's fascist Agenda 47, which is his published plan for what he intends to do with power starting day one and going forward if he gets back in the White House. It is harrowing. We'll follow that with Bob Avakian, the leader of the revolution, the author of The New Communism, speaking about what is science. This is profoundly important to understand and apply to all realms of human life, political life, natural world, social endeavor, and it is an excerpt from an interview that Andy Z and myself conducted late last year with Bob Avakian. And Andy and I will talk a little bit about this historical moment that we're in following that interview, from that interview excerpt from Bob Avakian, this rare time when revolution is more possible, but it's harder to see and it requires science to see it. After that, we'll hear from Rafael Cadeiras talking about the Nazi country singer Jason Aldean's rallying cry for a white supremacist civil war. Try that in a small town. And we'll end with myself and Andy Z giving tribute to the courageous, inspiring, wonderful singer Sinead O'Connor, who played such a formative role in my life and so many others who passed away this past week. So with that, let's dive in. Paul Street, interviewed by Andy Z.
I want to welcome Paul Street, a frequent guest of the RNL, Revolution Nothing Less show. He's a creator of the Paul Street Report on Substack, a contributor to Counterpunch. He's a member of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. And Paul, how you doing? I hear you're in the midst of climate catastrophe or close to it where you're at.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I am on an attic floor it's about 97 degrees outside, but I should be able to hold out for a good half hour before I faint.
So look, Paul, on the RNL show, we've been bringing to our viewers an understanding that we are living in a period that comes but rarely in a powerful imperialist country, a period when a real revolution's become more possible. And the hold of the system's ideas and the way it rules and the ability to enforce its rule over people is profoundly frayed right now because the rulers of this country are not just seriously divided, but they're actually split apart, with the fascist Republican Party no longer believing in what have been the normal ways that this capitalist imperialist democracy has been ruled. And as you're familiar with, and we've talked about this, Bob Avakian has made the sharp analysis that this crisis and these deep divisions in society can only be resolved through radical means, either murderously oppressive and destructive means or emancipating revolutionary means. But what we're going to be talking about is the radical reactionary revolution has initiative and it's unfolding out of the workings and the crisis of this system and the unresolvable, irreconcilable conflict with the other section of the ruling class. And it's given rise to this tremendous divide that does open up the possibility of which I just spoke. So, Paul, today we want to dig into some of the key developments of the fascist Republican Party. Last week, Paul, the New York Times, The Economist, and The New Republic all ran major pieces on the extensive fascist organizational infrastructure, policies, and strategy to implement a fascist agenda and political structures under a second Trump regime. The policy positions are summarized on the Trump campaign website under the heading Agenda 47, which stands for the fascist agenda after Trump becomes the 47th president. So I want to begin our conversation by asking you to summarize and to comment on what we learned from this new material that has come out in the liberal material in the liberal media.
Yeah, sure. And I add The Atlantic to that too. There's a recent piece in The Atlantic very much along these same lines. You know, you mentioned Bob Avakian. I've heard him more than once quote. He has a favorite passage from W.B. Yeats, the center cannot hold. The worst are full of passionate intensity and the best lack all conviction. And of course, that's a reference to the intense fighting spirit on the right and unfortunately the hollow resistance and passivity on much of what passes for the center and the left right now, but it's not just passion and intensity that the right has right now. They have the Supreme Court. They have numerous state governments. They have a disproportionate share of the firearms that are loose in this country. They have an army of election workers all the way down to the precinct level, which who are ready to try and cancel the 2024 election if it doesn't go that way. They have a potent, classically fascist, classically Hitlerian lie about an allegedly stolen election in 2020 that is accepted by most of their frothing base. And now this time they have a fully worked up, and this is very different than 2015 and 2016. They have a fully worked up and detailed policy plan for drastically increased, right, authoritarian executive branch power to fundamentally remake the political superstructure of this country and this society along fascist, Christian, white nationalist lines. This time around, Trump has an army of revanchist policy wonks from the Heritage Foundation, the Claremont Institute, Project 25, CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Coalition, and other horrific right-wing outfits like that. I love that CPAC calls itself the Conservative Political Action Coalition because there's nothing conservative about this agenda. It's a radical agenda, a radical right-wing agenda, a neo-fascist agenda. They say they want to dismantle the deep state. They say they want to tear down what they call the administrative state. But what they really mean is they want to take over the state, the deep state, the administrative state, and turn it into a fascist authoritarian state ruled from the top down. And the components of their plan, this is a detailed, worked up policy agenda. And if you want, I can get into some more details about it. There are four basic components of it, and they are clear as day. Component one, crush the independence of all the hybrid congressional and executive branch agencies, which are able to, whose heads are often operate without direct control all the time from the president, and whose heads can't just be automatically fired by the president, like the FCC, which is in charge of media, like the FTC, which is in charge of antitrust laws, like the FDA, which is in charge of regulating the pharmaceutical industry, and all the way down the line. It's way beyond what you hear in the media a lot, that he's going to turn the Justice Department and weaponize it against his political enemies. Of course he's going to do that, but he wants to go much deeper into the whole federal congressional structure, further than any president has ever gone since FDR in the 30s, in a very different kind of way. The second part of it is he wants to strip employment protections. We heard about this back during the Trump, near the end of the Trump administration. So it was called Plan F. He wants to take away civil service protections from literally thousands of executive branch employees, fire them, and replace them with toadies whose sole qualification for working in various parts of the federal government is that they are loyal to him. The third part is he wants to scour all the top leadership positions of intelligence, of diplomacy, and of defense, and put people in charge that are just, their only sole qualification is fealty to dear leader Donald Trump. This time around, this guy wants a military that will go out and crush in the streets of America the next George Floyd rebellion. And the last part is something called impoundment, which is just basically reserving to himself the right to not spend funds that he is legislatively and congressionally sworn to spend. So if he doesn't want to spend on clean water, or he doesn't want to spend on civil rights protections, or if he doesn't want to spend for the Department of Justice to look into white supremacist militias slaughtering civil rights protesters in the street, then he doesn't have to, you know, impoundment.
You made an important comment, which I like to speak, we should elaborate on. They say they want to demolish the deep state, but actually what they want to do is take over the deep state, and they'll rebrand it into, the state of the people or something like that, which that they actually control. And, you know, in these articles of where and listening to their people, here's a quote. you know, from Trump himself, where we've had it on our show. You've quoted it as well. In Michigan, he says, "We will expel the warmongers from our government. We will drive out the globalists. We will cast out the communists, Marxists, and fascists. And we will throw off the sick political class that hates our country." So these are all words that speak to a social base that he has whipped up. But it's not something separate from this policy, which is one of the points I'm trying to actually bring out for people to see. This is not just the ravings of a lunatic, but actually the person who can clear the ground and mobilize the forces for a program that's been worked on for decades now.
You know, I don't want viewers to underestimate how dangerous this is and how even dangerous it is understood to be, not just in radical circles like ours, but even in relatively bourgeois, moderate, but intelligent and perceptive circles. So, for example, Bryn Tannehill, who is by no means a RevCom or a Marxist or a leftist or whatever that means anymore, is in the New Republic just this week. And she actually said this. She actually wrote this at the end of an article in which she dealt with a lot of the things that we're talking about. She says, the United States is probably, this is Bryn Tannehill, of a graduate of the Naval Academy, okay? I just wanted, right, to read what she wrote in the New Republic recently. The United States is about to have a, quote, fuck around and find out moment that's lethal to our form of government as we know it. And for her, that means democracy. The rapidity of the collapse, she said, is going to be terrifying. It will rival the end of the Weimar Republic in terms of its swiftness and how far it swings away from democracy and human rights. It will come like a tidal wave, she writes, so much so fast that civil rights organizations won't have the resources to fight more than a fraction of it. And she says the result will be like a sandcastle walls trying to hold back a tsunami. Now, that's very fatalistic, and that presupposes that we don't rise up and say to this fascist, many-sided fascist movement that you'll have to go through us to get to that point. But this is how dire she understands the menace facing the country. And this is not from an especially radical perspective, you know. And if people are thinking like that at that level, that's very reflective of divisions within the elite, the kinds of things that Avakian has been writing about, really, not just recently, but for years.
So people know, so here's just some of the titles, and this goes on for pages. Agenda 47, day one, executive order ending citizenship for children of illegals and outlawing birth tourism. Agenda 47, protecting students from radical left and Marxist maniacs infecting educational institutions. Agenda 47, ending the nightmare of homeless, drug addicts, and the dangerously deranged. So this just goes on. Agenda 47, firing the radical Marxist prosecutors, destroying America. Agenda 47, President Trump's plan to dismantle the deep state and return power to the American people. So we have this agenda, a full-out fascist agenda, and I've read maybe five or six things from, I don't know, there's dozens and dozens of these policy positions that are this way. At the same time, the second thing we've talked about, and that it's very important for people to get, is that there are personnel, hundreds of people working on this way to give the new President Trump or whatever fascist president comes to power the right to fire people who aren't loyal, and they already have the lists of the people who are loyal to replace them. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, this is a vision, and it's a detailed vision for a sweeping transformation of the entire political superstructure and reaching down beyond that, the transformation of the society. It's an attempt to create a new way of life animated by a Christian, white, nationalist, patriarchal vision of what America is supposed to be and what life is supposed to be like in this country. And yeah, this Agenda 47 will tire you out reading it because it's got a whole bunch of different angles. They want to transform education. They want to transform immigration. They want to transform everything in this very darkly revanchist and reactionary kind of way. The personnel transformation that Trump wants to have in this government geared around personal fealty towards him. And this is a defining characteristic and aspect of fascist movements. And it's really chilling, and it's extraordinary. And
I think we should kind of wrap up here. And, you know, I hope to see you on the show.
Super. Very good.
Okay.
That was Paul Street, author and historian, speaking about the Trump Republican Party plan for outright fascist rule, Agenda 47. Now we're going to hear from Bob Avakian, a revolutionary leader and author of The New Communism, speaking about what is science. And this is an excerpt from the Bob Avakian interviews with which Andy Z and I conducted with him late last year. And all three interviews, extensive, up close and personal, inspiring, informative, and hardcore for revolution interviews with tremendous heart and soul. You can watch all three of them up at revcom.us or youtube.com/therevcoms, and I really recommend you go there. And we're going to follow this excerpt that we're about to play with a discussion between Andy Z and myself about this historical moment, which is a moment when revolution is more possible. We'll get into why that's true and what needs to be done to seize on this time.
I think it would be really helpful for our audience to hear from you a very basic understanding of what is science and why is it so important, when, particularly at a time when so many people, including among the oppressed, are, oh, science, I'm not going to get vaccinated, I'm not going to do any of this, who knows what this is all about. So I think it's very important for people to understand what it in its essence actually is.
Look, science, you know, there's an interview with Ardea Skybreak, Science and Revolution, and she makes a point and emphasizes it. Science is an evidence-based process. You go by the, you interact with the larger reality, you gather evidence and facts about, you know, what that shows, what you, you know, what comes forward, what the evidence is about different phenomena, different parts of reality. And then that's the raw material from which you then look to see what are the patterns in that reality, what, you know, might be superficial, what's deeper, what are the underlying causes of it. You know, you have to go to work to do that. And then you analyze that, and then you synthesize it. You draw together the essential things that you can learn from that about the patterns in reality and underlying driving forces in reality. That's what science does in any particular, it's just a way of engaging and learning from reality by applying the method of analyzing what you're learning from interacting with reality and then drawing together the key things to get to the core, the essence of what that shows. And, you know, this is in, whether it's medicine or any other, you know, physics, you know, biology, archaeology, any other sphere of science, this is what people who are applying the scientific method are doing. And, you know, a lot of people these days are anti-scientific and they don't want to hear about science because, well, some things have been really terrible things have been done in, you know, in the sphere of medicine, you know, like the Tuskegee experiment, you know, where they let black people who had syphilis just suffer from it, to see what would happen. And there have been other things, you know, of that sort. But Skybreak also makes the point that that's bad science. Mm-hmm. And you can use the good science, the actual scientific method that I was just speaking to actually learn about reality and to refute the bad science. And, you know, people, some people say, you know, and it's understandable, people say, especially people who are oppressed, well, they've lied to us about everything. They lie to us, you know, about the history of the country. They lie to us about the present reality of the country. They lie to us about how people are treated in this country now. You know, they just lie. So why should we believe anything they say? And the answer to that is you shouldn't believe anything they say, quote unquote, but you should apply the scientific method to actually investigate reality and then do the work to determine what that actually shows. You know, and for example, vaccines. All right, you know, yes, it's true. The ruling class, you know, down through history here in this country and other places, carried out terrible things in the name of science, including medical science. But then if you analyze further, like, do you really think, for example, the ruling class of this country wants total chaos, where everybody is so sick that they can't even go to work, that the economy breaks down, that they're weakened in the international arena where they're contending with other imperialists like Russia and China, you know? But more to the point, look at the actual evidence. Millions of people have gotten vaccines. There are almost no serious side effects from all this. Look at the actual evidence. Don't look at what somebody says on the social media. I mean, you can look at it, but then compare it to reality. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the actual evidence about, that's how you know. You know, or, you know, Kyrie Irving and apparently Shaquille O'Neal and some of these other fools talking about how the world is flat. You know, well, look at the evidence. Is there any evidence to show that the earth is not flat, that it's actually round? There's plenty of scientific evidence. You can look into it yourself and you can determine for yourself what's true. And that's what the scientific method is. And everybody, not just scientists, but everybody, when they're dealing not only with natural phenomena, such as hurricanes, you know, are hurricanes, do they occur because God wants to punish America because it's letting gay people have rights? That's what Christian fundamentalists say. Is that the truth? Or do hurricanes happen because a whole bunch of people in Philadelphia sneezed at the same time? You know, or is there actually some real causes of hurricanes? What are they? You know, look into it. Determine for yourself what the evidence shows on the basis of actually rationally engaging reality and looking at it and then synthesizing the evidence. Yes, the earth is actually round. I mean, I don't know if he's joking or not, but I read a statement by Shaquille O'Neal where he said, well, I've flown from one part of the world to another and I never tipped over. So how could it be round? I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, first of all, Shaquille O'Neal's a pig anyway and proud of it. If you don't believe me, go check it out. You know, he brags about how he went on raids with the Drug Administration and stuck some drug dealer's or alleged drug dealer's face down in the toilet. So, you know, I don't have anything good to say about Shaquille O'Neal to begin with, but this is a world-class level of ignorance to talk about that. I mean, if you put an ant on a basketball and it goes around the basketball, it's not going to flip over, okay? You know, and the same thing is true with the big sphere of the earth compared to a tiny airplane, okay? The airplane goes around like an ant going around a basketball. You're not going to flip over just because it's round, okay? I mean, but they, you know, don't take my word for it. Go do some work. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things we talk about in the culture, the lack of curiosity, mm-hmm. You know, just laziness. You know, people not really wanting to do, you know, don't want to read a book, don't want to learn about history. You know, okay, maybe I'm overstating, it's not everybody, but it's way too much a phenomenon in the culture. You know, don't want, the lack of curiosity, it's one of the striking things. How are you ever going to bring into being a better world if you're not curious, including about the way the world is and why it's the way it is? So, you know, do some work. You know, this is work anybody can do. Anybody can look into the evidence, anybody can, you know, apply the scientific method to determine what's true. And that's what people need to do. I've said it before, don't believe anything on faith, but go by the evidence, go by the scientific method to determine what's actually true and not what's a bunch of bull that some people put out there, you know, to try to mislead you or because they themselves are misled, you know, and may make you feel good for a little while, but it isn't going to change anything that makes you feel bad.
That question bears rewatching and really thinking about in relationship to all the events that happen in the world and how the system works and what is to be done about it. And that followed a first question when we played a little bit of Stevie Wonder and I asked him, what about what Stevie Wonder is saying? When you believe in things that you don't understand, you suffer. And Baba Vakian went into really an incredible answer that led into the question of science and overlapped with it on the role of religion in keeping people from really understanding the problem we face and the solution.
That's right. And once again, this is taken from the three-part major interview that we did with Baba Vakian last fall here on the Revolution Nothing Less show, which is incredible. Up close and personal experience with this most important leader and thinker in the world today, revolutionary leader Baba Vakian, where you get to know him intimately. He shares so much. I mean, you get a taste of it mm-hmm. with him talking about Shaquille O'Neal in the midst of breaking down science and other things for good reason. But you get a much deeper sense of who this leader is as a person, what shaped him, and the kind of world he's fighting for, the strategy to make it possible, the constitution he wrote for the new socialist republic. And it really, it's an expansive interview, and it is so for this moment in history as well, a time when the future hangs in the balance. So we really want to urge everybody watching to not only go and watch all three parts of this interview, whether you've watched it before or not, but also to be part of spreading it. We're on a mission right now to get this interview seen by thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and really millions. It can change the political polarization atmosphere, what millions of people are thinking about, debating, doing with their lives, and it actually can play a pivotal role in shaping the future.
If you think, well, maybe that sounds good, but I don't think revolution is possible, you need to watch this interview, because he breaks this down in a many faceted way, and the questions that we asked him are questions that you have. That's how we pick the questions. Mm-hmm. There are things that come up, and he answers them in a way that enables people to not just understand what he's saying, but to then go and run with it.
You know, just one further thing is, we ask questions people have, but we also asked about things that people are not yet even thinking to ask.
That's
thinking
true.
The question, because Bob Avakian is coming from the reality, a scientifically grounded understanding that a whole different world is possible, a revolution and a way to solve the very things that you and Paul were talking about, the very things that we'll be playing in a few minutes from Raphael about these white supremacists summoning people. This country music singer is one of them, to Civil War, a lynching song. And so people are living in the world that is of this system and they can't see beyond it. And I just want to say this in this moment, and it has to do with the conversation that we're about to have on it being a rare time when revolution is more possible. For this interview and this leader to be known, when people are starting to come up against the way that profound things are changing rapidly, can really open a pathway to the future.
So, Sansar, let's take a few minutes and get a little bit deeper into this rare time off of the discussion I had with Paul Street. You know, Paul Street referred to the poet W.B. Yeats and read this quote that he said, correctly so, that Bob Avakian has quoted many times, "The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity." Now, that stanza, which is the first stanza of a poem, The Second Coming, begins like this: "Turning and turning in a widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, and the center cannot hold." And I think this is very evocative of the kind of situation that we face. The cohering norms of society are being torn apart because there are these two sections of the ruling class, with one section not believing in how this society is functioning and wanting to radically change that, while the other section is just, as we've said a couple times already, is just trying to hold on to those oppressive norms. And all of this can cause people to question, along with the jolts that are going to disrupt people's lives.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a time where, not just over a year ago, one night, people went to sleep across this country, women, men, and women thought they were full human beings who had control in a basic way, even if it was under attack, over their lives, their reproduction, their futures. And the next morning they wake up and there is no right to abortion. You know, maybe it's state by state, but at a national level, women are second class citizens overnight. Just in the last few weeks, we saw affirmative action ripped away. We've seen Supreme Court decisions, this fascist Supreme Court, legalize discrimination against LGBTQ people. There's every day, I mean, these are just a few of the jolts. There's the Paul made a half joke about almost fainting in the attic, but we see raging fires. We see polluted, just destructive poison air hanging over New York City and other parts of the world as well. We see just one disruption after another taking place that, yes, disrupt people's daily lives, but they're taking place at a time when precisely their expectations that somehow this system is permanent, it's stable, it'll see things through. Maybe there's things they don't like, but they accept the system itself and its norms are giving people reason to question. So these things kind of interact with each other.
Yeah, well, they ask, why are these things happening? And do they have to be this way?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the opening for the question, could they actually be different? But if people are, so the first thing point you're making in relationship to these big changes that our fascists are trying to ram through is that people's lives are disrupted, and it's causing them to question the permanence of existing conditions. It's causing them to think about it. Why is it this way? Does it always have to be this way? But then, you know, the other thing that happens is among the decent people, the people who really hate what's happening, who are upset by it, is that left to their own devices, they're going to strive to hope for the to themselves get involved and come under the wing of the Democratic Party. That's the only choice that they have. That's the only good choice. Anything else will not lead where we need to go. And at the same time, many of them, in a tremendous amount right now, are filled with despair because they haven't in their thinking broken from the way things have been. And so they look out there and say, well, there's no hope.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important to understand that your life can be massively disrupted. Horrible things can happen, things that make you question. But then you're going to work your way through those questions with whatever pre-existing understanding of the world you have. You know, just you know, you think about it, you get a disease, you might all of a sudden your whole life changes. But until you study that disease, you have no idea. Or you go to a professional who, a doctor who has specialization in it, you have no idea what you're supposed to do about it. That's, again, back to Bob Avakian's interview on science. You need the tools to look beneath the surface. So on the surface, people are experiencing these disruptions, but they are still processing them. Oh my God, the only choice besides the fascist Republicans is the Democrats, or the woke lunacy that is going more and more lunatic. Tear down individuals, cancel each other, retreat into a safe space, hide from the world. Or in this country, you have all the parasitic individualism, people retreating. You have people responding in the ways that they already were thinking, but in even more extreme forms. But there's more opening if we go out, if the revolutionaries go out and people learning about this go out and struggle with people. And I think about and bring them revolution, bring them a different way and fight with them against the ways that they've been trained to think that are really keeping them trapped into going along with this system. We can break them out of that in a heightened way right now. And I just wanted to say we had this really, really exciting little snapshot report at RevCom.us about just a handful of people who went out to this nationwide librarian convention in Chicago and got out. We are the RevComs, the declaration we've put out, and talked to these librarians from all over the country. And these librarians are under attack for having Pride Month books, for having books on Black history. They're being persecuted. And some of the conversations reported in that snapshot written up by the people who went out were so interesting, where people said, you know, I'm thinking of one of them, somebody said, I was in the civil rights movement. And I always thought, you know, we've got a fight to wage, but we can make reforms, and we've made reforms, and we can keep fighting. But now, looking at what's happening in this country, I'm beginning to think we can't make it work. Maybe we do need a revolution. There's people were more open. There's many examples of that.
Yeah, there are. You know, the RevComs went to one of these school board hearings where there are this tremendous reactionary things coming from the school board. You know, sometimes it's around books, sometimes it's around pride and LGBTQ rights. But the RevCom speaker there actually went and talked about that we are preparing for an actual revolution, that you have no answers to this, and this is what's needed. And whatever people understood about it, there was a lot of applause in that basically suburban community with a lot of reactionaries in it. Look, I think this is very important. It's a big part of what the work that revolutionaries have to do in this period. This is what you're saying. And we have to go up against the woke lunacy that you're doing. We also have to go up against just the rampant individualism, which is the big part of the ethos of bourgeois democracy and this system itself. And one of the forms it's taking right now is just a tremendous amount of turning inward and internalizing all of this. It's often taking forms in depression, addiction, lashing out at each other. These are stuff we have to struggle against. We have to struggle against American chauvinism. especially as this question of war developing, the question of religion and believing things unseen or controlling things, and actually all the varieties of that. There's the organized Christian fascists who are trying to turn this country into theocracy, but there's also all the spiritualism that keeps people from actually seeing the actual problem we face and the solution in a revolution. So, you know, I think there's more to say about this, but I want to just bring it back to one point. The cohering norms of this system are fraying in that widening gyre. Things are falling apart. The center is still holding, but it's coming apart. The question is can we bring new cohering That's norms right. to people? New social relations, a constitution that is not about revenge, that is not about the private property of the few on the basis of exploiting the many. These are things that we can bring to people, that the climate doesn't, whether we can reverse it fully or not, I don't know. But one thing we can do is go to work on it and stop this dependence on the capitalist machine that runs on oil, including the whole defense apparatus, where the U.S. military is the largest user of oil, as we've put on the show many times, and fossil fuels altogether. So look, the point I'm trying to come to is the cohering norm. I'm repeating myself, I know.
It's important.
The cohering norms are coming undone. We have new cohering norms, and we have a new way that this society could be ruled to bring about a new system in the Constitution for a new socialist republic in North America that Bob Avakian wrote, that would bring in a socialist system where you could go to work on all of the legacy of the oppression and exploitation and outmoded social mores and morals that have existed for millennia. And we go to work on that as part of emancipating all of humanity.
Yeah. So in light of that, precisely, and I'm glad you repeated yourself, because it's important, and it's not well understood spontaneously. This is a time to not live on the surface of just the horrible things that the fascists are doing and the system is doing, and also not on the surface of just the really f***ed up ways that so many people, including decent people, are reacting to this. Retreating, crawling in and chasing after the Democrats, you know, getting caught up in self, all the things you're describing. If we who want change, if you who want change, tone it down because everybody else is getting caught up in bullshit, you're missing how much is pregnant beneath the surface with the potential to put on the map real revolution and a whole different way society could be organized. The demands in this proclamation that we put out, we need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. For this demand, which breaks down the new society, how we could solve the environmental crisis, how we could solve the rights and the needs of LGBTQ people and women, to redress discrimination, to give people the most fundamental right of all, people as a whole, to come together consciously, to change the world in a radical and emancipating way, and to debate that out, be part of that. We can bring this right now when the old cohering norms are breaking down and put it on the map, and this could take hold in this immediate period among thousands, tens of thousands, and soon millions in a way that is unprecedented, because we are in unprecedented times. So precisely, don't live on the surface of the mood, but be a dynamic agent of changing that together with us. All right, that was Andy Z and myself, Sansara Taylor. Before that, you heard Bob Avakian answering the question, what is science? And you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We want to move now to Rafael Cadaris, a regular commentator on the RNL show, talking about the Nazi country singer Jason Aldean and his rallying cry for civil war. Try that in a small town.
Fascist country singer and wannabe thug Jason Aldean just released a new song, which has already gotten tens of millions of views, called Try That in a Small Town. This is a straight up white supremacist lynching song, and it's a rallying cry for civil war. A lot of people have condemned it for being racist, which it is. But if you don't get the fascist political violence at the heart of it, you don't get where this is going. Let's watch.
Sucker punch somebody on a sidewalk, carjacking old lady at a red light. liquor store. You think it's cool, act a fool if you like. Cuss out a cop, spit in his face. Stomp on the flag and light it up. Yeah, you think it's tough. Well, try that in a small town. See how far you make it down the road.
See how far you make it down the road? Think about it. Jason Aldean is saying that people who protest against police brutality or burn the flag in opposition to this country's crimes should get beaten down or even killed. And he's unleashing his millions of followers to do just that. These people can't wait to just wipe out everyone they hate. Black people, immigrants, people who don't conform to the patriarchal gender roles, and anyone who stands up against this system. No, he didn't specifically mention race. But who do you think his racist audience is thinking of and afraid of when he talks about crime? And when he says,
around here we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't.
Who do you think our own is? Do you think he's talking about the Muslim family next door? Or how about Jose and Maria working at the meatpacking plant? The trans kid in the small town high school, or the 16-year-old girl who needs an abortion. No, as he put it, it's all about the good old boys raised up right. Well, who are the good old boys in this country? In case the message wasn't clear enough, he shot the video in front of the Maury County Courthouse in Columbia, Tennessee, the exact place where 18-year-old black youth Henry Choate was lynched in 1927 by a mob of hundreds of white people who attacked him with a sledgehammer, dragged his body through the streets, and then hung him from the second floor of the courthouse. In this very small town in Columbia, Tennessee, at least 20 black men and boys were lynched or disappeared by white mobs and the KKK. Jason Aldean's good old boys. Now fast forward to the modern day lynching of George Floyd by a sadistic pig who kneeled on Floyd's neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds, suffocating the life out of him while his fellow pigs looked on. Police murder after murder, beating after beating, video after video in small towns and big cities. And Jason Aldean wants people to just swallow this shit? Yeah, people were right to come out in these streets to express their anger. And yes, to cuss out these murdering cops. And yes, to stomp on that flag, which is nothing but a symbol of oppression, of slavery, genocide, and war from the beginning of this country down to today. And they were right to defend themselves and each other from these murdering cops and these fascist scum attacking them. As We Are the RevCom says, we need to be involving masses of people and rising up to resist the continuing crimes of this system and defending people from attacks on their rights and their lives by racist, woman-hating, and anti-LGBTQ thugs in and out of government. All as part of preparing for revolution. And by the way, Jason, you lying MAGA moron, you cherry-picked a bunch of images to show protesters as violent and scary. But the truth is, the vast majority of violence during the George Floyd uprising came from police and fascist vigilantes like Kyle Rittenhouse. But you just want more of that kind of violence. As for trying this in a small town,
we'll try that in a small town.
Guess what, Jason? We did. Have you seen this map? And a lot of the protests in these towns were mostly white kids. That's right, your disobedient sons and daughters. That must really terrify you, huh, Jason? Lastly, to all the decent people who aren't trying to hold on to the good old days when good old boys ran the town, Native people were erased, and black people and women knew their place. You need to face what is happening in this country. This is not just another racist country song. It is an incitement to civil war, and tens of millions of people are loving it. Right now, the society is more divided than it's been since the first civil war in the 1860s. And these MAGA mobs are armed and itching for a new one and a fascist takeover, with the 2024 election very likely to be a key turning point one way or another. There is no going back to normal, and you shouldn't want to anyway. Instead of choosing sides in a new civil war, what we need are masses of people prepared to defeat these fascists as part of getting rid of the whole capitalist imperialist system which spawned them. A system which has white supremacy and male domination built into it, and right now is pushing humanity toward climate catastrophe and World War III. We've seen the potential for revolution in the powerful and courageous uprising of millions of people of all races in 2020. No, that didn't lead to fundamental change, because you can't end racist police murder with more black cops and mayors and reforms and silly demands like defund and abolish the police. To end police terror, you need to abolish the whole system these police enforce and replace it with a completely different socialist system. If you've been discouraged, hopeless, turning inward, sleepwalking while this nightmare accelerates, that's unacceptable. The oppression that made you come into the streets in the first place is still there and getting worse, and there is a real way to fight it. So it's time to wake up and get organized, not just for an uprising, but for an actual revolution. To all those in small towns and big cities who have the heart to fight for something really worth fighting for, it's time to join the RevComs. As Bob Avakian wrote recently, especially at a time like this, a time when big things are up in the world, affecting the whole future of humanity, when those big-time exploiters and oppressors who rule over us in this country are bitterly divided among themselves and increasingly unable to hold things together as a unified ruling class. When there is not just an urgent need, but a real possibility to seize on this situation to overthrow them altogether. If you are not getting with the RevComs, the revolutionary communists who are working every day for this revolution, if you are not part of working to bring about this revolution, then what the hell are you doing?
That was Rafael Cadeiras on the fascist anthem, Try That in a Small Town. And now we're going to close out today's show with a tribute honoring the courageous singer, Sinead O'Connor, who recently passed away. This is Andy Z and myself in conversation.
Since Sarah and I were both listening to music from an artist who's the opposite of that fascist pig who we heard from before. Sinead O'Connor is a beautiful artist, a courageous artist who I had the chance to briefly meet, but she's somebody who sang at a concert that we were involved in, Resisting Concert, from the organization Refuse and Resist in the early 90s. And she stood with the people. That's the thing that really struck me. She took on the Catholic Church, God damn it. He took on the Catholic Church and its abuse of children before it was a big, when it was highly unpopular. She ripped up a picture of the Pope on TV. She was so brave. You know, she sang at a anniversary for Bob Dylan, and half of the crowd was booing. And she just stood there and stared at them, and then Kris Kristofferson came and he put his arm around her, and she said, "I'm all right." And the band started playing the song, and she told him, "Stop."
Okay, turn this up. "Until the philosophy which holds one race superior."
And she pulled out the artist in her ear, so they can hear themselves sing, and she screamed. She screamed in a lyrical way the song War. And for her, it was a war against all forms of oppression. It was really a moment in the face of a howling mob of somebody standing up to it. And she had a beautiful voice.
She did.
And I think we were both tearing up listening to some of the songs. So I want to give you a chance to talk too, but I'm so moved by this. We're going to play one song or part of a song soon, Black Boys on Mopeds, little motorcycles. And we're going to, she did it on a TV show here. We're going to show you at the beginning of this song, she tells you, what we're going to do is she tells you why she's singing, and we'll just play the second verse, which it'll be clear from what she has to say.
Well, I don't want to say too much more. I mean, I appreciate what you said. I'll just say for anybody who was alive and paying, even not paying attention, when Sinead O'Connor, when she emerged on the scene, everybody remembers her silhouette with no hair, singing with such heart and feeling. I mean, everybody remembers it. And then when she ripped up that picture of the Pope, I think it just busted open. I mean, I know for me personally, I was very young, and it just changed, like, what you, it was scandalous and so inspiring. It like broke something in your assumptions in society. And she had a lot of courage, and she paid an incredible price for always speaking her conscience. And so, yeah, I think we should see that.
That's an important point. I mean, she was hounded.
It's true.
Hounded. This system has no love for anybody who stands against it as implacably as she did at that time. Mm-hmm. And the music industry was treating her like trash at that point. And there were a few courageous artists who defend her. And I just want to say, we're going into this rare time, and we need more artists to take that kind of stand with their art and with their voice. And she did that. And last, you know, she did suffer terribly from mental illness and tremendous tragedy, including recently. And when she first came down or with mental illness, she went public with it and shared it with the public. And she took up a lot of different causes, some good, some not so good. But the one that was, you know, she also stood with the Irish people in their struggle. And she's did some beautiful songs that you can find online with the Chieftains. But we're going to go play this one bit of the song, Police Who Killed Black Boys on Mopeds. So watch this and take a listen to Sinead O'Connor and see what a beautiful and heroic artist can do, and read about it and see how she really changed lots of young women like yourselves, like yourself, and all of us who were looking for people who would stand up against this machine.
Well, I wrote this song probably about 21 years ago when I was living in England. And at that time in England, it was rather a racist society. For example, if a black person burgled a house and it was written about in the newspaper, it would say in bold letters, it would say black burglar. It wouldn't say just burglar, you know, as if it was an issue what the color was of the person that burgled your house, you know. Anyway, so there was a, near me, there were two young boys, maybe 14 and 13, who had borrowed their cousin's moped. The police had assumed that they stole the moped, and they chased the two boys, who kind of panicked and smashed into the side of a petrol station and ended up dead. So it's not a happy song. So it wouldn't make you want to live in England, basically.
England's not the mythical land of Madame George and roses. It's the home of police who kill black boys on mopeds. I love my boy, and that's why I'm leaving. I don't want him to be aware that there's any such thing as grief. Young mother down at Smithfield, 5 a.m. looking for food for her kids. In her arms she holds three gold babies, and the first word that they learned was please. These are dangerous days.
say what you feel is to dig your own grave. Remember what I told you. If you were of the world, they would love you. But England's not the mythical land of Madame George and roses. It's the home of police who kill black boys on mopeds. And I love my boy, and that's why I'm leaving. I don't want him to be aware that there's any such thing as grieving.
That was Andy Z and myself, Sansara Taylor, speaking of the singer, Sinead O'Connor. And that brings us to the end of today's show. I want to thank you for spending the hour with me. I want to thank as well Henry Carson, our assistant producer and man of great erudition. And we're going to go out with some more music from Sinead O'Connor. I'll be back and talk to you next week. I treated you mean.